Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Kamud Kalia to the broadcast. Kamud is the Senior Vice President and the Chief Information Officer of Akamai Technologies, a $2.3 billion global content delivery network services firm. Kamud's responsible for leading the strategy development and operation of the applications and infrastructure that support the company's business operations. Prior to joining Akamai, Kamud served as CIO at Direct Energy, Quest Communications, and the investment bank Dresdner Kleinward Wasserstein. Kamud holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Electronic Engineering from Bangor University. I recently caught up with Kamud in his office in Santa Clara, California, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Kamud described how his team partners with the product development team to design and test solutions, and Principle 5, external partnerships, as Kamud discussed his relationships with customers who are often peer CIOs. We also talked about the challenges and advantages of being a CIO in a company of technologists, the importance of agility in a fast-growing company, adding value for end customers, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. Fortinet, the global leader in high-performance cybersecurity solutions, is a proud sponsor of the Forum on World-Class IT. The Fortinet Security Fabric delivers the broad, powerful, and automated protections today's organizations require to secure their evolving networks, from IoT to the cloud. Learn more at fortinet.com. Kamud Kalia, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure. By way of background, you've been the Chief Information Officer at Akamai for 5.5 years. And I wonder if we could begin with that role itself. Maybe you could take a moment to provide a broader context as to Akamai's business, but also very importantly, your role in it, the role of Chief Information Officer in this broader technology firm.
Akamai has been at the heart of the internet, really, for most of what we would know as our experience as internet users. And so companies that do a lot of their business online or have content that they want to distribute over the internet. So for example, companies that do software downloads, companies that do most of their business, so consumers purchase product online. Those companies have been dependent on Akamai to run and scale their businesses. I don't know if you're familiar with the way Akamai works, but we have a network of servers around the world. And we position our servers so that they're closest to the end users and store content from our customers on those servers so that the experience that the end user has is the fastest and richest possible online experience without any of the sort of latency that would be caused by just distance or congestion on the internet if our service wasn't available. So in effect, we're speeding up the internet by overcoming its natural limitations. And then as the CIO within that organization, you know, like I think many tech company CIOs will understand, having a lot of technology people in the company, first of all, means that there's a very tough crowd to work with. I have at least 2,000 people in the company think they can do their job better than I can, and probably can, right? They probably could be weekend CIOs and do a really good job. But what we need them to be doing, obviously, is other things like developing customer-facing products and services. And then, you know, having such a technology-aware user community means that they are actually quite willing to try and experiment things and often have tried things before I roll them out at enterprise level. But also they're very critical of features on, and so I've got the greatest community of people to debug any of my solutions. Sometimes I wish they'd debug them a little bit earlier. They will often give, you know, very good feedback on technology that I'm proposing we embrace or adopt at the enterprise. So that can be a fun and interesting experience. I think something else, by their nature, you know, engineers tend to consume things that they have either built or they know people that have built. and then stay quite loyal to that. So we have this tribal allegiance around the company to different solutions. And so I, you know, even though I'm in a tech company and people think I should have this good fortune of being surrounded by technology people, sometimes they can be very stubborn and reluctant to change and embrace new solutions because they're so comfortable with their own solutions. That's not that dissimilar to what a lot of other enterprise CIOs find with their end users. So a lot in common with other enterprises, even though I have some, I think, natural advantages with a tech-savvy user community.
Kumud, you've raised a very interesting topic that you and I've covered in the past, the need to compete with oneself, for lack of better terminology, the need to almost make change itself a core competence of sorts, especially for a technology organization. When you joined the company, it was roughly half the size that it is now. It's gone through tremendous growth, presumably has plans to grow at a similar clip as time moves on. And I know that you've said that part of the responsibility of a CIO and his or her team is to foster business agility so that as the organization identifies new opportunities to seize, that IT is not the sort of gum in the operation that slows things down, but rather is an accelerator for the organization as these new opportunities are identified and pivots are necessary into new businesses, for instance. I wonder if you could take a moment to reflect upon some of the changes that you fostered within IT and therefore for the broader organization to bring about this business agility.
That's a very interesting observation. You know, I think companies that are growing at a certain rate maybe have a slightly different expectation than companies that are more mature. And the expectation is that whatever solutions and business processes they have in place today, over some point in the next few years, they will outgrow. So I think that people are accustomed to scaling at a pace that they're outgrowing a lot of their current solutions. And it's not because we can't put in something that's scalable, it's because our business keeps changing while we're growing at that pace. So we may, 10 years ago, we probably were designing for a lot of a US-based audience. Now that we've globalized considerably and we'll continue to do that, now we have to think about cultural adoption around the world as we scale our business processes and systems and that includes IT solutions. We have to think about what languages we're presenting user interface in. And so clearly what would have fit 10 years ago will no longer be fit for purpose. And so given that there's that pressure to continue to reinvent as we scale, it fosters a mindset across the user community of what's the next thing we're going to be asked to do. And, you know, we may spend 4 or 5 years doing something before we decide we've outgrown it and we're on to the next thing. And I think that keeps the business in a level of agility that some companies don't have. You have companies have made investments in legacy systems and continue to operate their business off of those systems for, a decade, 2 decades or more. And then they become sort of reliant and dependent on a certain way of working. The pressure to change has to be kind of almost artificially applied, because it's not there naturally through the company's organic change. I think that's a fundamental difference between companies who are fast growing and companies who are growing at a slower pace or have more maturity. Now, we're still probably, for some people, view Akamai as an internet long timer, but really we're still a relatively young company, less than 20 years old.
Yeah, very interesting. It was also interested to note that during your time with the organization, one of the pivots, so to speak, into new opportunities has been to enterprise customers. And that has put it more squarely into a space that you can certainly relate to. Now, all of a sudden, your peers are oftentimes customers of the organization, among, of course, other functional areas that were the more traditional online banking, news, you've mentioned in the past as well. But I know that your organization does a lot to influence the product as users of it first before it goes to market, as interlocutors with your peer group among CIO and IT executives at other organizations. And I wonder if you could offer, I guess, first and foremost, separating those topics for a moment. First, in terms of how you work with your colleagues to test the offering that is being formulated, to influence it, as I mentioned, to suggest new aspects of it based upon your use and so forth. Can you talk about your methods?
We here didn't really have an enterprise business per se. We sort of formally established that just over a year ago. And prior to that, we had some enterprise customers, but really weren't focused on developing products that were focused at enterprises. We were really focused on our traditional customers in say, the media business or in the e-commerce space or those companies that traditionally have done a lot of internet-based commercial business. We often were an afterthought for most enterprises that weren't in that context. If they really only had a sort of brochureware website and then did the bulk of their business in more traditional methods and weren't so dependent on the internet for their core business, then I don't think we had a lot to offer enterprise CIOs. You know, we could accelerate and protect their websites. I think what made it more probably interesting was there was the sort of rise of cybersecurity, and that became much harder to tackle with traditional solutions, as well as there became a much bigger overlap between threats emerging from the internet and those that were sort of hitting companies behind the firewall. We sort of saw that market potential and said, all right, let's focus on enterprise customers and products specifically for that user community. And then who best to, you know, to ask about those things than our internal IT team. So the IT organization, Akamai Now, as you does spend quite a lot of time now working with our product colleagues on testing products, testing ideas. And we might be whiteboarding ideas over future products or product features. We may be debugging products that we're pushing out into the marketplace. And yeah, we do have a arrangement that the head of that business unit has said that we're not going to go out to beta with customers until our IT team has signed off on the product. And that's like a user acceptance test of the product, their own technology. We're putting it through how would this product work outside of a lab environment inside a real enterprise. We'll often find things that need to be improved, like it could be the way we install it, how easy it is to configure it, and all of those things make it easier to adopt, and that's exactly what we want for our customer experience. It puts the IT team, I think, in a different place than it's used to being, where it's focused on business operations, and now this is maybe more focused on customer adoption. And being a sort of reference use case for a number of our product implementations.
And it strikes me, a hypothesis I'd certainly like to test with you. Unfortunately, from my point of view anyway, you ask the average CIO who their customer is, and oftentimes they will refer to colleagues, which in my view, again, is a declaration of distance between what IT is doing and the value that the enterprise is creating in not recognizing the actual customer, the people who are providing the revenue to the enterprise. Whereas what you're describing, it strikes me, Kumud, is an opportunity for your team to have that laser focus on where the actual value is created. Now, naturally, there's a tremendous amount of value that happens within the business operation, as you referred to, efficiencies that can be garnered, automation of tasks to make them more efficient and to reduce costs. But having that lens on where there are revenue opportunities, where IT departments can benefit by what's being created and being that advocate, I have to imagine it is a great way to tune your organization differently in thinking more on a regular basis about the end customer, about revenue-centric innovation. Is that a fair hypothesis as I frame that?
The way we try and think about this is, you know, we want to do things because they're good for Akamai, but if we can do them in a way that our solutions can be replicated by other companies, then we can extend what's good for Akamai to be good for other companies. That makes sense. I don't want our IT team to be, for example, only focused on what's good for other companies and then neglect our own company, right? Because then we suffer in the process. So I think there's this balance of, let's try and build our solutions in a way that they're not overly unique or customized to our business. Let's make them so they're easily reusable by other companies who can learn from what we've done. Maybe that's a way of more genericizing our implementations, if I can say that.
Right.
So it does require a mindset that says, you know, since we're in an engineering culture, we have a tendency to overly customize any solution and make it very optimized to our current business structure. What I've been trying to do is encourage a more generic implementation, more out of the box, if you will, so that if that's the way we think about our product, we don't make it really difficult for other companies to adopt because it's so tuned to our environment.
Mm. Very interesting. I want to take the other side of this. As someone who is networked among the CIO community, perhaps a bit more than the average chief information officer, you're exposed to IT departments and leaders who are at varying levels of maturity. And I'm curious, as such, having spent a lot of time with CIOs and probably garnered insights as to what separates the best ones from the also-rans, forgive a rather broad question, but I wonder if you can shed some light on some of the attributes anyway that perhaps in line with some of the themes we've already covered or not as you see fit, the practices that modern CIOs are putting in place to make sure they're set up appropriately for the future to be higher level contributors of value to their enterprises. Any thoughts you care to share there?
Yeah, I think often how CIOs go about their business is, you know, very context specific. You know, CIOs that sometimes find themselves in a particular business circumstance, let's say their IT organization is outsourced, you know, they have less degrees of freedom to operate than someone who doesn't have that scenario. And so I think it actually becomes more challenging in that case if then you want to experiment and try some new technologies out because you're dependent on third party and a contractual arrangement which may not, you know, allow for some freedom. You know, depending upon what your other business circumstances are, you may or may not have the wherewithal to go take advantage of the latest techniques. You know, I have the comparative luxury of being in a situation where, you know, I have a team of very smart people continue to leverage their ideas and encourage them to innovate and experiment and try new things while we've got this environment that's already knowing we're going to outgrow, you know, things that we put in, say, 5 years ago. I have sympathy for those CIOs who are not in that place, you know, if they've got a legacy environment, an outsourced IT organization. I think, you know, because they sometimes ask me, so, well, how do I do this? I kind of understand the idea. How do I go after this? I sort of look at their relative situation and say, wow, that's kind of hard. You know, what we try to do is make our solutions, as I mentioned earlier, easy to adopt. If I may, I'll talk about an example of a technology that is an Akamai product called Enterprise Application Access, which is based on a company we acquired last year. But we were using the product before we acquired the company. So our IT organization had identified this solution that allows remote workers to access applications inside our company over the internet in a very streamlined way. If I can back up a little bit, the traditional way that my IT team enables remote workers to come into our company is that we ship them a laptop wherever they are in the world. We ship them an Akamai laptop. And then we give them credentials and we sort of carefully control what they can and cannot access through our VPN. And that's a cumbersome thing for us to do, that we have to manage the logistics around shipping these laptops and then retrieving them when the assignment is complete for whichever remote worker we're doing this to. It's also cumbersome on the other end because, you know, if you're a freelance worker, you know, with maybe a dozen clients and you just want to use your own device for doing your work and serving your client needs. And then here comes Akamai saying, oh no, you're going to use our device. And so I think it's a clunky experience on both sides. And we identified this solution which allows users to use their own device and securely come into our environment, not have to go through the VPN and get access only to the application we want them to access. And in the use case that we were using, it was language translators around the world that were translating our web content into local languages for different countries. Since we made that acquisition and made that solution a part of our business, put a challenge out to my team, I would like us to onboard 100 applications, 100 enterprise applications within 100 days. That challenge then demonstrates to other enterprise CIOs this really is an ease of use solution. And, you know, I put the challenge out there, 100 days, and we achieved 100 apps around about day 80. And by the time I sort of closed the window on the 100 days, we were at about, I think, 120, 122, something like that, number of applications that we had onboarded through this solution, which means our employees or any other remote workers we choose can access over 100 of our enterprise applications securely using their own devices and using only the internet. And so that's an example of us using our own technology, but doing it in a way that makes it easy for other enterprises to adopt, no matter what their circumstances are.
Very interesting. I like that example. And actually dovetails to a related topic to that and other aspects of what we've already covered, which is the extent to which your team has become influential in looking out into the technology environment, not only for solutions that would benefit your IT team and your enterprise as customers, but also as potential acquisition targets. Again, it seems like you have a very, I would say almost unusual, especially relative to the average CIO, the average IT department, consultative role on behalf of the enterprise in terms of areas to get involved in, companies to acquire, solutions to fill out the portfolio, and so forth. And so just as we've described, you know, number one, I'll loosely, perhaps this isn't the way that you think about it, but at first you set up your organization with this sort of philosophy of business agility and took the necessary steps to be able to provide that. Number two, get more involved as the company gets more involved in enterprise customers, which gives you and your team a lens towards thinking about a higher level of value to contribute as sort of customer one, my term, not yours, but the first customer before it goes out to beta with real customers. And now thinking further about how the landscape, the technology landscape is evolving in ways, all the way to the point of suggesting and advising on potential companies to target as acquisitions. I think a very interesting place to be in terms of a level of consultation, a level of advising to the rest of the organization. Can you talk a bit about that as well?
You know, I think you've characterized that correctly for a segment of our product. So those that are focused at enterprises like the one I described, I don't think that applies equally across all of our business segments. And that wouldn't make sense because I wouldn't be the ideal consumer of those products. But for the enterprise segment, yeah, you're spot on. My team does get consulted now frequently about their ideas, about their experiences, you know, with different products or companies that we've tried and worked with, about, ideas for future products. There are problems we're trying to solve. And if we can't find a good solution and we think it's in our wheelhouse or could be, we could extend our product roadmap or interest to get into that space as well. Then, yeah, I think it's an interesting way to operate as an IT guy because, you know, we can sort of develop and productize solutions to problems we're encountering anyway. We can sort of shape how the future of the enterprise evolves. So I think that's very exciting. And of course, you know, we have to sort of continue to get this market feedback to say, are the problems we're trying to solve things that other companies are also dealing with? And so again, it comes back to that. We try and genericize. And then, you know, if we can solve those problems for ourselves, can we do it in such a way that other companies can adopt the same solutions without it being overly customized to our use case? That a level of more expansive thinking that I expect out of my team than just solving our own problems, which is how most IT organizations would operate. So it's not just what's in front of us, it's then try and put yourself in the shoes of, you know, customers with other scenarios and contexts and say, would it work for them too? That makes us better IT guys, frankly.
Understandably so. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you, perhaps on the heels of some of that investigation you just described, as you look out 2 or 3 years into the future, what are some technologies that you're particularly excited about that are beginning to make their way onto your roadmap?
Infrastructure has become very exciting again because a lot of the what traditionally has been hardware or appliances is now becoming software. And as we're sort of virtualizing a lot of our infrastructure and making it more internet enabled or dependent, and enterprises are moving a lot of their traditional infrastructure to the cloud or outsourcing to SaaS providers, I think you've got a lot of change and disruption coming into the infrastructure space. And that I find fascinating because those are things we've depended on for a long time. We've operated our companies based on paradigms that haven't really changed in decades. And I see a real revolution in the infrastructure space. Consumers have got used to things like Wi-Fi and expect it everywhere. They expect to choose, you know, multiple devices in which they want to interact and not always the same thing on any given day. That is bleeding into what the user experience is for employees and customers. So I think it's an exciting time for companies to have to respond to that by really turning themselves inside out so that those infrastructure solutions they depended on are not an obstacle but an enabler. Because I think there's a lot to play there. And yeah. I'm encountering all sorts of non-trivial problems to deliver what people think is a trivial user experience. So to make the user experience easier and easier is actually harder and harder. You know, we're solving a lot of problems there to deliver what is a really easy user experience. Even the Wi-Fi everywhere is really hard for enterprises to deliver. You know, right now, I'm talking to you through a speakerphone on my desk. You know, in a Wi-Fi enabled environment, that speakerphone's gone. You know, those are the kind of things I'm trying to solve right now. And we have solutions identified. We have, you know, change management things we have to work through to get our users to embrace our new solutions so they can change the way they've always been working so they can embrace this new user experience. Yeah, there's lots of infrastructure I want to rip up and throw out, but that means reinventing the way we work.
The challenge is as much cultural as it is technological. Am I hearing you correctly on that?
Yeah, think of it as providing the millennial experience to everybody. Then you maybe get a flavor of how difficult the change management is. But a lot of people want it. It's not that everybody doesn't want it. But people who are dependent on email and phones, right, they really haven't changed the way they work for maybe 20, 30 years. The millennials say, well, I just want to text and use Slack and Snapchat, and I don't want to use all those tools, right? Why do I need to go into Excel just to share this chart? How do you enable employees to be their most productive and collaborative without our existing solutions getting in the way?
Kumud Kalia, thank you so much for joining us in the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever source you use for podcasts. Please join us next week for the 300th broadcast of the Forum on World Class IT, when my guest will be retired General Stanley McChrystal, former commander of the Joint Special Operations Command. Fortinet, the global leader in high-performance cybersecurity solutions, is a proud sponsor of the Forum on World Class IT. The Fortinet Security Fabric delivers the broad, powerful, and automated protections today's organizations require to secure their evolving networks, from IoT to the cloud. Learn more at fortinet.com. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not.
Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.